In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Thank you for joining us today. As every week, we bring you a little more intelligence on big government. This week, we continue our look at why elections matter, including some down-ballot issues, which come down to, who do you want in charge of government? Remember, an election is about giving somebody else legal control over your life, your business, even things like your church and basic rights like freedom of speech. Unfortunately, government has become so big and so bloated that it touches nearly every aspect of our lives nowadays, which is exactly why you need to be involved and why you need to vote. There is perhaps no greater example of incompetent people who will willfully waste your money than Multnomah County right here in Oregon. Effectively, Multnomah County is suing oil companies and blaming the weather on them. As I was reading their complaint and grievances, the whole thing reminds me of a satirical economic parable from 1845 by Frederick Bastiat, the Candlestick Maker's Petition. Bastiat was a French economist and defender of free markets. The Candlestick Makers petitioned the French government, lobbying for protectionist legislation against the unfair competition of a foreign rival, the sun. They argued that by forcing people to close curtains and shutters and any other openings that could possibly let the sun in would lead to higher consumption of candles, which would not only be good for the candle makers, but good for all of their suppliers, and wouldn't everybody be better off without the sun? The point of the satire was to point out how ludicrous government intervention is, but also how wasteful it is to force people using government to pay for things they don't need when things like the sun are free. Longtime listeners of iSpy Radio will remember us talking about Obama's market transformation, which led to trillions of dollars of government money, your money, being spent to prop up the global warming industry, using government to punish efficient forms of government and seeking protection for the so-called green energy, because head-to-head, they couldn't compete, with green being more expensive and less efficient and less reliable than competing forms of energy. If they weren't being handed trillions of dollars by taxpayers, then they simply could not compete. Think of where we could have spent all of those trillions of dollars and have cheaper utility bills. That incompetence is just one thing on the ballot this year as you choose who is going to have legal power over you, not to mention legal power over the economy. We'll also be talking about some other down-ballot issues, including Measure 117, the far-left scheme to push ranked choice voting that could drive the democracy right out of democracy. Elections really do matter, and as we've been reminded of recently, who do you want in charge during a massive disaster? To talk about the hurricane and any even bigger disaster, our own government, especially here in Oregon, I'd like to welcome back Chuck Weiss, meteorologist, scientist, and global warming debunker. Chuck, thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're quite welcome, Mark. Glad to be here.
So you were on the Lars Larson show on Thursday talking about the hurricane, hurricanes maybe, and unfortunately I did not get a chance to hear that before our interview, but I know some of our audience out there likely have some questions here, like this one. How unusual is it for two back-to-back major hurricanes within about 10 days of each other?
It's not unusual at all when you look at the climate records. The frequency of two storms in a row like this is not large, but if you look at what causes them, it's not, like I said, unusual at all. And what I did, because I was interested in Hurricane Milton, which exploded to a Cat 5 status when it first got going in the southern Gulf of Mexico, I was interested in knowing whether or not there was any additional moisture available, and that's fuel to a hurricane that would be in the Gulf of Mexico. And what you do to look at that is you take a look at the dew point temperatures. And so I went back in the archives. I was just curious. I went back into climate archives. And I dug up some weather maps that were done in the year 1962 in the Gulf of Mexico. And over the Gulf, you had a lot of ship reports, and the ship reports will tell you temperature and dew point. And the dew point's what's important because it tells you how much moisture is available in the air that was evaporated from seawater and can be inducted into a storm like Milton to explode to Cat 5 status. And what I found was that the amount of moisture back then was no different than it is today. The dew points were all running between 25 and 30 degrees Celsius, which is what they are today. That's a very moist tropical air mass and environment. And so my point in all this was, if the dew point temperatures are the same in 1962, which they were to today, if you could redo the weather situation with Hurricane Milton and all the weather surrounding it, and move the clock back to 1962, the same thing would have happened because the same moisture was available. It would have exploded to Cat 5 status and then weakened as it headed out towards Florida. And the same thing with Hurricane Helene. Both of them didn't have any additional fuel moisture in spite of the hype from global warming people that saying the warming oceans are causing additional fuel moisture. Well, there's nothing on the record that supports that if you take a look at the dew point temperatures, and that's what's critical to look at when you're looking at the potential for hurricane development. But it's even more than that. You also got to look at the entire atmospheric profile, how unstable things are, and then if things are unstable and they can start the development of a hurricane or tropical storm, then the moisture at the bottom, which is near the sea surface, is what's important to what's going to get pulled in and used as energy to develop the hurricane. And so there is no difference between now and 62 years ago. And I can look at hurricanes back on the record that were just as powerful this October as we've had before. In fact, the one that comes to mind in 1954, which was 70 years ago, was Hurricane Hazel. Now, that one went up the Atlantic coast up into the Carolinas, but it was a full-blown Cat 3. It caused a 18-foot storm surge. Almost $300 million in damage in 1954 dollars, and it killed like 20 people. It caused a tremendous amount of damage, and it was more powerful than Milton was, as it made landfall over Florida yesterday. So there's just nothing in the climate records that you can look at that would support this idea that atmospheric CO2 is changing the climate such that it's causing these horrific storms to develop, and now we've got to take more and more action. These are just desperate calls by a very corrupt and powerful government that we have right now that can't get its hands off of enough of our money, because all their solutions are always involved in just taking more money from you and throwing it at a problem that doesn't exist.
Yes, absolutely.
As far as the climate change problem goes, that's absolutely true.
Yes. So real quick here, Helene, which hit western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee, it almost seemed to increase in rain as it moved inland. Charlotte and Asheville, North Carolina, are roughly 400 miles inland from the Gulf Coast, which is where it came from. Is that unusual to drop so much rain that far inland?
No, that's not unusual either, because we know that from the trajectory that the hurricane took. It made a right turn towards the southern Appalachians at the time it got that far north to intercept them. And so you had a couple of things going on there. You had it interact with a mid-latitude weather system, and then as it moved into the Carolinas, that's part of it, but it moved into the southern Appalachians, and what's critical there is the terrain, because as you push that hurricane into the higher terrain, you're going to cause what they call orographic lifting and just wring a lot more water out of the system and cause these torrential rains. So under those conditions, you can absolutely get the kind of rains that we saw. And there have been other hurricanes in the past record that will do the same thing when you force the storm into mountainous terrain after it goes over land and it loses its heat source from the surface, such as the warm ocean water below it, and then it enters a colder atmosphere with a lowering tropospheric height, and it just squeezes all the water out of it and causes all these horrific flooding problems. But that's been on the record for a very long time, too. And I also saw and heard people saying that the government's got some sort of weapon systems they can modify weather and do this sort of thing. That's absolute nonsense. Don't fall for anything like that to any of the listeners, because it's just not true.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, actually, so I'm glad you brought that up. But I have to say, a lot of people after COVID are certainly at least more willing to listen to conspiracy theories. But that was my thought too, is that I just don't see how that's even possible. All right, let's go and take a break. There is a major lawsuit that our government is involved in. They are suing the weather. Well, companies that they blame the weather on anyway. We'll talk about that next with Chuck Weiss. Today's show is all about elections mattering. Who do you want in charge of how government spends its time and money? And case in point, Multnomah County Grand Central for Crime and Homelessness is suing utility companies. Do you want your government to sue companies that you depend on?
Well, we're talking with Chuck Weiss, an actual meteorologist today, about that. And so, Chuck, Multnomah County started a lawsuit last year in June of 2023. They were suing a whole bunch of oil companies. They've now added Northwest Natural to their nuisance lawsuit, and they've also added the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, which is a nonprofit research group that Art and Noah Robinson run. And so what do you make of this lawsuit?
Well, the lawsuit is based upon the same sort of thing that they have been trying to push the climate protection program on. It's a complete fraud. It's just shameful that you have people going after companies like Northwest Natural Gas or Art and Noah Robinson or anybody else who has very strong scientific evidence of what they're proposing to do if the climate protection program has any validity to it, which it doesn't. And I pointed out to these people, as I protested myself, the implementation of the program, because the way they've worded it, calling it a climate protection program, and then based upon what it would actually do, even if it was wildly successful, won't produce any change in that's measurable in atmospheric CO2 levels, the weather, or the climate. It's scientifically impossible, and you can't get around that. There's no arguing, well, what about this? It is scientifically impossible to ever get a result that would make any difference to the weather, the climate, or anything else atmospherically. And yet they're saying, well, if we do this program and we do all these little things like plant trees or put charging stations in with all the money we're going to get from it, that somehow that's going to make a difference. And it absolutely will not. This program, by definition, is a fraud.
Yeah.
And it's just shameful that you've got a bandwagon of attorneys that are going after people who try to argue with this.
Yeah, well,
I mean, if they had something that was scientific, it would be one thing, but the whole program is based upon a fraud. And why should any Oregon citizen fall into the trap like this? Because if it gets implemented, what they're going to do is they're going to go after companies like Northwest Natural Gas and all the fuel suppliers, and then they're going to tell them, we put emission caps every year on what you can emit, and they'll go back to their sales of gasoline or natural gas, which contain the emission equivalents, and they subtract them out from their cap, and then if you go over that amount, they charge you $129 per metric ton equivalent of CO2 that you emit.
Yeah.
So they're not going to eat that.
And to be clear, that's the climate protection program that you're talking about. As far as the lawsuit is concerned, just to kind of back up a little bit for people, Multnomah County is blaming the largest oil companies for the 2021 heat dome that killed, they say, 69 people. And they're claiming that pollution caused by those companies' fossil fuel products contributed significantly to and caused the exacerbating heat dome. And I should add that they're seeking $50 million in damages and $1.5 billion in future damages. And they're also seeking an estimated $50 billion for an abatement fund to study, plan, upgrade public health services and infrastructure to help weatherproof the county during future extreme heat events. I mean, of course, that's going to go to far-left organizations, we're sure. So what is the heat dome that they're talking about there, and is that even a real thing?
Well, it's a fancy term that the weathercasters that do TV broadcast invented to try to simplify what's going on in the atmosphere to create the hot weather. But a heat dome has been around for thousands of years. It's nothing new. CO2 didn't start causing these things. It's nothing more than an area of high pressure where it comes over over an area like when you're going to get into hot weather in the summer, and the air subsides with high pressure, so it sinks a bit and it warms with respect to its own altitude. And so when the hot summer sun rays shine on the ground, it inhibits the convective overturn of the air near the ground, so the temperatures near the surface rise very rapidly until you can regain that convection and get rid of the heat and transport it away to higher altitudes. So that causes hot weather. But that means that the hot weather isn't caused by the radiative effects from CO2. It's caused by the sun. And the sun will cause this sort of warming. And the sun angle was critical in this case of the heat dome because it happened right after the passage of the summer solstice, which was on June 21st. And then we got into this hot weather on June 28th. And the timing is what caused it. We typically don't get our hot weather heat dome, so to speak, that early in the summer, but we got one that year, and it wasn't caused by anything other than the atmospheric circulation patterns. And to get a heat dome, you need colder weather on both sides of it, And the colder low-pressure troughs are what cause the intensity of the sinking air in the heat dome. So it has nothing to do with atmospheric CO2. It's the normal way the atmosphere operates. It's the normal way we get hot weather here in the summer. And that heat wave in 2021 was no different, except that it occurred at the height of the highest sun angles. And that's what caused the temperatures to go over the old records, which were set later in the year in July and August, that were 107 degrees at Portland. So that was it. That was the cause of it. And I wrote that up, and on Ed Berry's site, my analysis of that is all contained there, and anybody interested can read it. But this had nothing to do with CO2.
The climate protection plan that you were talking about there is really, I think, an outgrowth of this and similar lawsuits. Is they are trying to, these lawsuits are trying to find them guilty, except, of course, the problem is this is being done in a court with a jury. Well, the problem with jury trials is that it's not hard to find 12 stupid people who know nothing about anything but will believe everything, especially in downtown Portland.
Well, that's a problem, too, because I've often wondered, you know, when these people that have weaponized the government go after somebody, they seem to hold these trials in areas where they'll get a political outcome rather than a sensible one. And I've always wondered when they do this, like when they targeted Donald Trump, whether they're picking, hand-picking juries that are people that are going to be called for jury duty, who they know the political backgrounds of and will likely get a better result in a conviction than if they just randomly picked people. I don't know that's a fact, but I'm just suspicious by the ridiculous verdicts that come out of some of these trials. And so, yes, in Multnomah County, you may have a problem with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I was a defendant, I would want to move it away from, move it to the other side of the state where you might have a shot at getting an unbiased jury that doesn't buy into this climate crap.
Well, we certainly know that grand juries can indict a ham sandwich, and it would not surprise me that they're indicting the weather up in Portland. Actually, this next question will take a bit, so let's go and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll be talking about this lawsuit against the weather by Multnomah County. Stay with us.
You see, that's the real threat to democracy, stupid people. That's the threat. Our biggest threat to democracy is stupid people.
And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We talked today to Chuck Weiss. We're talking about things that matter after the election, like who do you want in charge during a major disaster, like what we've had there with Hurricane Helene, and who do you want in charge of your government deciding how they're going to spend their time and resources and your tax dollars, and crazy things like what Multnomah County is doing, trying to sue companies and blaming the weather on them. And Chuck, they're blaming these oil companies for this heat dome. How can they blame oil companies for people dying of heat? I mean, how could anyone forensically tie a heat death back to an oil company? I mean, maybe they died because they couldn't turn on the air conditioner due to high energy costs caused by Multnomah and Oregon's insistence on inefficient and more expensive green energy.
The answer to that question is they're trying to tie the hot weather itself to the emissions of CO2. And they're saying we know, or they think they know, that the emissions of CO2 are causing these high temperatures. And there's no the problem is there's no scientific evidence of that whatsoever. This is all pure non-scientific conjecture by their part, and then they'll fall back on something like a climate model saying, well, the climate models predicted this sort of thing, when the climate models have no ability to predict such things. There are these gross exaggerations and inaccuracies that are put forth to try to justify what they're doing when they sue the oil companies or they sue anybody that produces energy. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's just no truth to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So they have added Northwest Natural and Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine for spreading what they call misinformation about climate change. And, you know, there's a saying, the truth doesn't mind being questioned. A lie hates to be challenged. And I can't help but notice in this situation that it's the global warmers hating to be challenged. I mean, how dare you question us? So in that context, how does one spread misinformation about climate change? And so what if they do? For or against, it's an opinion.
Yes, absolutely it is. And I've noticed the same thing. I engage people in social media who spread climate hysteria. There's all kinds of people I've seen from the UK or England and from other parts of the country who say they've got all this expertise. And then I'll start asking them questions to show that they're what they're saying is wrong when they're blaming the increase in the temperature on CO2 and blaming all these weather disasters on CO2. I start picking apart their arguments and ask them questions, and suddenly they stop responding or they block me. And it happens all the time. So you're absolutely right. Those who don't tell the truth and don't have a good scientific backing to what they're saying, they immediately realize they're falling into a trap and lose the argument, so they shut you up, they block you, or they just start ignoring you. And I see this all the time, all the time. I engage people like this, and that's the typical result that I get. You never get very far with it. And I'm hoping the public awareness of this, I think it is increasing, and I hope that we become more aware of it, because it's revealing of how weak their arguments are when they carry on like this, and then when you ask some questions, they can't answer them or they block you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's the way it's been.
Well, this is why when I hear the pro-climate change side react the way that they do, that how dare anyone question them, that's when I think climate change is more religion than science. Science doesn't mind being questioned. In fact, it should and does welcome questions, but if the government is now saying you better not dare to question global warming, then that is entirely religion, not science. And again, this is why elections matter, because it's about free speech. Everybody should have the right to question and have different opinions. The government should not have the right to silence people.
Yes, it is. You have to have free speech. And it's one of the reasons why I think these people in power now want to restrict it, because they have an agenda and they don't want the truth to get in the way of the agenda. So that's their whole MO. They have to block people and censor people and then put out constant statements through legacy media that what they're saying is true and it's irrefutable. And then when you have evidence to refute it, they just won't let you put it out.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, it is. So I'm not exactly sure when we transitioned from we're all going to die because of a new ice age to we're all going to die because of global warming, but it was roughly the 80s or so. So after 40-some years, just for rounding errors, we'll say the 80s. So roughly 40-some years, shouldn't there be, after four decades here, shouldn't there be some indisputable facts or evidence that they could point to and say, see, there really is global warming happening?
Yes. Well, I mean, you can point to the temperatures. If you look at the satellite record, we did get some warming in the satellite record from it started in 1979. But like I said, the reasons for that are explainable as well. They say, well, this is all caused by atmospheric CO2, but if you run the radiative calculations for that, they don't match the temperatures as they went up and down. They were caused by ocean cycles and also what's apparently now a decrease in the Earth albedo, or the amount of reflected sunlight that goes back to space. It's actually decreased by about 1% since they started the satellite record. And what that does is it lets more solar radiation in to cause warming. And when you run those calculations, they're very close to the actual amount of warming that we've received. So that's the better explanation for this. The radiative effects from CO2
But of course, the global warmers are saying that it's mankind. So shouldn't they be able to point to some evidence that, yes, man did something and then the global warming happened?
Well, you can take those radiative calculations from CO2, and they're also indisputable. We can do radiative transfer calculations, but the problem is when you look at the numbers, they don't match what's going on in the climate at all. And this is what was taught to us years ago in atmospheric science, that CO2, even though it's a greenhouse gas, it's along for the ride because of water vapor, the clouds, and the hydrological cycle. It gets buried in that, and there's no way to pull a detectable signal out of it. And so we never had this idea that CO2 would be able to change the climate when the founding principles from atmospheric science were brought forth, you know, 70 years ago. And radiative transfer calculations were done back then, too. But the only thing that changed since then was the invention of climate models, which are also an artifact of science,
so,
in my opinion.
So they can point to the computer models as evidence that there is global warming. That's brilliant there.
Exactly.
So, likewise, they've been pushing green energy since at least the Rio summit in 1992. So we've been slapping up windmills and solar panels and spent a few trillion dollars and doing so for about 30 years or so. If that's the solution, shouldn't we see some evidence their solution is working? I mean, shouldn't the Earth be showing signs now of cooling that they can point to and say, see, all that green energy is working?
Yes, you should. I've thought about that before, too, because California was involved in their green energy projects now for, what, a good 10 years? And so I've thought of that before, like asking their politicians, okay, you guys have been at this now for 10 years. What's happened to the CO2 level? Is it going down at all? You keep saying, even after you start your green programs, that all these weather disasters that we've seen in California and elsewhere are the cause of climate change. Well, if they are, how come your state's still getting them? It's getting more than its fair share of weather-related disasters, and yet you've been at this trying to reduce greenhouse gas thing now for over 10 years. It's just completely silly, because even if these programs that they're trying to set up were successful all across the country, you'd only be and you could eliminate all the emissions of CO2 across the United States. It's only 12.6% of the global total. It still wouldn't stop the growth of atmospheric CO2.
Right. Well,
and that's what they say you need to do in order to control the climate, which is complete nonsense.
Yeah, I would think we should be seeing some kind of results now, and that's why we say elections matter. Make sure your politician isn't in the global warming cult. Chuck, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, you're welcome, Mark. Glad to help.
Joining us now is Representative Ed Diehl from House District 17, which takes up most of Marion County, east of Salem, and a bit of Linn County as well. Elections matter, and it's important not just to vote down ballot, but also to vote for ballot measures. Ed, thanks for joining us today.
You bet, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so for those listening outside of Oregon, as we say, Oregon is the Wuhan lab of leftist policies. They experiment on it here and approve them before they release them into other parts of the country, and ranked choice voting is definitely headed your way if it can pass here in Oregon. So this is measure 117 here on the ballot this year. So let's get a handle on what ranked choice voting is. Can you explain that to our audience?
You bet. This is a major change to how we vote, not only how we vote, but how we tally votes and run our election systems. So this was a House referral. It came from House Bill 2004 and 23, and it implements ranked choice voting with instant runoff. We just abbreviated ranked choice voting for certain elections in the state. So it'd be statewide, but it would impact elections for president, U.S. Senator, U.S. Congress, governor, secretary of state, treasurer, and attorney general. Interestingly, the state legislators are left out of this. That's a whole other story I'd love to talk to you about.
Wow.
But it keeps our existing primaries, so we still have our partisan primaries, but within those, we use ranked choice voting. And then for the general election, we would use ranked choice voting. And what ranked choice voting is, in a nutshell, is you will get a ballot with all the candidates listed, and you will have the opportunity to rank them from your first choice through maybe your fourth choice or sixth choice. That really isn't defined in the bill. And then how you do that is you just place a mark in the first choice column for your favorite candidate, and then a mark in the second choice column for your second, and so on. You don't have to rank everybody. In fact, sometimes you'll have more candidates than there are rankings. And then the magic is in how this is counted. So they will count up all the first choice. First choice selections. If there is a majority in that, the election's done. But if there's no majority winner, then the person with the least number of votes is disqualified. And then those voters who voted for that person, their second choice is identified and added to the tallies for the remaining candidates. And then you sum them up again. Do you have someone with a majority of remaining votes? And that process continues round by round until someone is left with a majority of remaining votes. Now, that sounds simple, but it's not so simple, and it's wrought with fatal flaws.
Yes. Well, I know that you participated in a debate about ranked choice voting, and I'd like to get into that because you were talking off air. It sounded like the responses were very interesting. But in terms of some of the dangers that this system is fraught with, can you explain those to our audience?
Yeah, I'll try and recap them. One is to understand when they say majority, what they mean. They don't mean a majority of votes. Like you and I would think, let's say there are 100 people that voted in an election. A majority is 51. What they mean is at the end of the tally process, there's a majority of the remaining votes. because what happens through this process is ballots are exhausted. So if you make a mistake on the ballot, which you're more likely to make a mistake with a ranked choice ballot than what we do today, your ballot will be exhausted and it will not be counted. If you didn't rank someone, if you only put a first candidate and you didn't put a second or third choice, your ballot will be exhausted and it is no longer counted. So you could have a scenario where, let's say there were 100 voters to start with, but after four rounds of voting, only 80 are left. A majority in that case is 41. So they have to really redefine what they mean by majority. So it's very misleading. The other thing is they claim that it eliminates the spoiler effect. And the problem is it doesn't eliminate the spoiler effect. In fact, there's a lot of evidence that shows that ranked choice voting leads to very wonky and unpredictable results, where you can have someone who would have won in every head-to-head competition against his opponents, but because of the way the ranking and tally process works, they will be eliminated. And it's hard to explain over the radio, but if you go to my eddeal.com website, I have a couple blog posts there on ranked choice voting, eddeihl.com, where I get into some examples and I link to many other references. This is a well-known, well-published flaw in ranked choice voting. It's no secret. Everybody knows it. So the question is, why are extreme left-wing progressive organizations pumping hundreds of millions of dollars across the country to promote this system?
Sure. Well, you know, you talked about the spoiler effect, and I know that's their big claim, but if we had used ranked choice voting back in 1992, Bill Clinton would not have been elected, because I think the majority of Ross Perot's voters, and he got 19, almost 20 million votes, the majority of those would have gone to George Bush, who only lost by about 5 million. So if we had used ranked choice then, Clinton would not have been ever elected.
It's the thing that's hard to do is once you change voting systems, you're also going to change behavior and candidate selection and and campaign strategy and everything else. So it's really hard to just say that on paper, but the problem is this system can be manipulated based on the combination of candidates you have and where the money goes. And it's got serious problems.
Yeah,
and,
well, because, and again, it's you are not just voting, it's a strategic method of how you vote, because in some instances, your actual first choice you may want to use as a second choice instead. And it's, as you say, it's rife with problems. All right, we're up against the clock. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Ed Deal talking about ranked choice voting. It could come here in Oregon, and if it does, it will be coming to your neck of the woods. Stay with us. Ed Deal is a businessman, entrepreneur, engineer, and is a state representative for House District 17. That's most of Marion County, east of Salem, and parts of Linn County. We're talking about ranked choice voting, which is on the statewide ballot here in Oregon, Measure 117. Unlike Las Vegas, what happens here in Oregon will not stay here. They will eventually try it in your state. And so voting manipulation really is nothing new. There are well-documented cases of how those in the know can manipulate voting by manipulating how people vote. I mean, there are cases of medieval monks who wanted a certain nun to be elected prioress, and by using various rounds of elimination voting, got the one that he wanted. And, you know, in short, it's not just who you vote for, but how you vote to get down to who wins. And I had mentioned in that last segment there that you had gone to a debate about ranked choice voting. This was at the Salem Chamber of Commerce. Talk to us about that and the reception of the audience.
Yes, I've done a number of debates. And the most recently, it was with the Salem Chamber of Commerce. And the feedback I got after that debate is they were overwhelmingly opposed to ranked choice voting. Hmm. And so I felt like I did an effective job of communicating the negatives. They don't see it. And from a chamber perspective, you know, why are they getting involved in how we vote? What they see is you know, who they put in the legislature directly impacts their ability to do business and free commerce. And so they want an election system of high integrity, just like everybody else. So I'm glad that they're chiming in. I also did a editorial debate with the Oregonian. I was part of a panel. The Oregonian editorial board has come out in opposition to ranked choice voting.
Hmm.
The Marion County Democrat Party is in opposition to ranked choice voting. I heard yesterday the Multnomah County Democrats are opposed to ranked choice voting.
Wow.
So this isn't a partisan issue. This crosses party lines. And it's really, my experience has been the folks that do a really deep dive into this and they see these inherent flaws are like, no, this is a step backwards. This is not a step forward. Well, even people who really want election reform, and I work with a number of them, they see ranked choice voting as a disaster that people will not like, and it will turn them off to true election reform.
Yeah, well, it gets to be a confusing process because there's a lot of manipulation on how you can get the one that you really want in there. And there's actually a mathematical theorem out there called the Gibbard-Satterthwaite theorem that states that every voting method among at least three alternatives can be strategically manipulated. Every voting method with at least three choices. I mean, so why do it? Because you want to manipulate the election. You had talked about, you've talked with people that do want to see some election reforms. What are some sensible election reforms that could work?
Well, one that, you know, and I'm not going to promote, I got to say, I'm very happy with the system we have. It's not perfect. It has flaws, but it's easy to understand. And we've built an amazing country, most powerful, wealthy, most diverse country in the world. I'm not ready to throw out our election system yet.
Right.
a lot of people are looking and trying to find a system that does lead to a majority, that does eliminate the spoiler effect. And one system that I think is worth considering is star voting. And that actually is an Oregon-based initiative, I believe. And it's designed to eliminate some of the fatal flaws that ranked choice voting has. Now, it also has its own flaws, but I think it's worth looking at. But again, I'm not in any position to endorse it, and I'm not ready to throw out the system we have.
No, I think the one that we have has been working pretty well, as you say, for, you know, a couple hundred years. And it's led to some pretty good results. We may not always like the results. One of the things that I can understand where people are upset with the current way that we vote is that minority parties, whether it's the Constitution Party or the Green Party or some of these other ones, they feel underrepresented. Well, it's because they're very much in the minority. And I think a better method, rather than running your own candidate who could actually act as a spoiler, why not just co-endorse candidates? You'd at least have a little bit of a say in them, and by throwing your support, maybe they would throwing your support behind them, they might be more inclined to hear you on your issues. But as far as just running a Senate, another candidate, nobody really pays attention to who loses. They only pay attention to the people that win, and so maybe get behind a candidate that can win, even if it's another party.
Right, and ranked choice voting doesn't fix their problem.
No,
ranked choice voting, it's okay to vote for your favorite if they're a very strong candidate or if they're a very weak candidate. But if they're in the middle, you may actually hurt their result, their chances. So it's a really weird way that it plays out. And, it is interesting that the backers of ranked choice voting, they're not middle of the road moderates that are looking to bring balance to Oregon. Okay, that's not. If they were, they'd be supporting Republicans right now. That's the
yes.
state of Oregon.
Yes,
they are to the left of mainstream Oregon Democrats, which are pretty far left already. They're to the left. It's Green Party folks. It's Democrat Socialist folks. The Arabella Partners, a very progressive, Soros-backed organization, is pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into ranked choice voting across the country. Do you think they're looking for balance in the Oregon legislature? No,
absolutely not.
They know where these flaws are in the system, and they are looking for ways to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's about forcing
ranked choice voting as a feature.
Yep, absolutely.
And with the right amount of money, they can take advantage of it.
Absolutely. It's about forcing the minority view on the majority, and I just don't think that's really...
Yeah.
We've got that enough already, unfortunately. All right, so let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we will wrap up with Ed Diehl. He's from House District 17, and coming up, we'll talk about motor voter and some other issues. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're wrapping things up with Ed Diehl, the representative from House District 17 in Marion and Linn County. So we've been talking about ranked choice voting, which is on the ballot here in Oregon. And you had mentioned during the break there that this would take away local control at the county level. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the other issues with ranked choice voting is you cannot get results at a precinct level. The only way you can tally a ranked choice voting election that goes past one round is you bring all the ballot data, individual data, to one location and run it through and tally them all at one time.
Hmm.
The way Maine does this is they put all their ballots on couriers and send them to Augusta, to a central location where they do the tallies. Now, in Oregon, we're probably not going to put them on a courier. We're probably going to send electronic cast vote records digitally to a central location and where this tally will be done. But this takes control away from the counties, and it takes transparency away from the election. Right now, I can go into any given precinct, go to a bin, pull the ballots, do a count, and compare that to my scanned count. Easy, simple audit. That ability goes away with ranked choice voting.
Wow. So it obfuscates
eliminates transparency.
Yeah, I was just going to say it obfuscates things even worse, and so there goes your transparency, which we already do not have in our elections, unfortunately. In the time that we have left, we talked with Dennis Lithcomb last week, because once again, we're finding out that people are being added illegally to the voter rolls. This was through the motor voters, but of course, that's just one method. You've also got Obamacare that adds... potentially, thousands more. So this is a mess. Do you think we have a true idea, a true scope of just how many people are on our voter rolls that shouldn't be? And what should the legislature be doing this next session to correct these problems?
Well, to answer your first question, absolutely not. We do not know the full scope of this. Oregon is an attestation state. That means you check the box on the form that says you're a U.S. citizen and no questions are asked. Now, the DMV in their process was supposed to be checking that through their process, not using the paper form. Clearly, they were messing it up. But every place else, through the Obamacare policies, you just check that box, and we assume that you're a citizen. So we have no real idea how many are in there. Now, some other legislators and I are introducing a version of the SAVE Act for Oregon, which would require IDs. We'll see how far that goes. But you'll see some legislation to really demand that we clean up our voter rolls. We're delinquent in that. In fact,
absolutely.
Judicial Watch back in July threatened a suit, and I believe next week they will be moving forward with that lawsuit, because Oregon is in violation of the National Voting Rights Act.
Absolutely.
Because we're not cleaning up our voter rolls.
Yeah.
We have non-U.S. citizens on those voter rolls, documented.
Yes.
So it's a serious thing. And I want people to vote, but people need to trust that their election system is secure. And we really need to rethink this whole attestation approach. I have no problem. I have to show my ID for so many other things,
right?
That are not nearly as important as voting.
Well, I know that I've seen a lot of videos where they're interviewing inner city blacks and they're asking, well, do you have ID? And they're saying, of course we have ID. How stupid do you think we are? So this notion that people can't or won't get ID, you're right. You need it for everything. So it's nonsensical that they're saying they just can't get that for voting. Real quick, in the time that we have left, another big issue that will be on many ballots this year will be various bonds, especially school bonds. And a lot of people would normally want to support their schools. But my question is, in the last biennium, you guys gave them a 10% bump, and the one before that was another 10% bump, and the one before that was another 10% bump, so they were outpacing inflation. And yet we've heard this year dozens of schools all across Oregon, some major ones, Portland and Salem, are slashing teachers and staff positions because they say they don't have any money. So and now here locally, we have one school that's trying to get a bond on. It's going to cost $500 million of interest payments over 30 years. This is obscene. Where is all the money going from these schools?
That's a very good question. from what I see, if you look over time, our administrative costs have skyrocketed in our schools. We now, for Salem Kaiser, for example, is employing healthcare workers, behavioral health workers. I don't believe that all our money is going into the classroom. That's where I want our money to go, into the classroom. And a lot of it is not going in that direction. So we need to seriously look at how our money is being used, not just with schools, but every agency. I tell you, 40 years plus years of one-party governance leads to this situation where there's a severe lack of accountability for how money's spent.
Yeah, it's political insanity, and voting in the same party time after time and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock. Eddie, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Instead of behavioral health workers, maybe we ought to hire some behavioral math and science teachers instead. Just a reminder that if you have not already, Tuesday, October 15th is the deadline to register to vote or to update your registration if you have moved. Even if you haven't moved, it's not a bad idea just to make sure it's still there. In Washington, the deadline is October 28th. In Idaho, that deadline has already passed. It was October 11th. California, the deadline is anytime after the election. No, just kidding. It's October 21st this year. Regardless of which state you're listening in, head to vote.gov/register, vote.gov/register to find out the deadline in your state. And there's also a handy link there to take you to the registration site in your state. Do not wait. Do not sit out this election. Not taking action is the surest way to not get what you want. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.